Grizzly. At Grizzly, we believe charging your electric vehicle should be simple, reliable, and affordable. That's why we design, engineer, and build our chargers in Canada, ensuring top-tier quality and performance. Powered by United Chargers, every Grizzly model is crafted in-house, built to withstand extreme conditions, and tested for reliability. Recognized by leading publications for its performance and value, Grizzly delivers both durability and intelligence with heavy-duty aluminum enclosures, premium output cables, and smart charging features like scheduling, usage tracking, and OCPP compatibility with multiple charging apps. Grizzly. Simple. Reliable. Affordable. Built for every climate, every EV, everywhere you go. Visit grizzly.com to learn more.
Hello and welcome to the Batteries Included podcast. It's Friday, October 5th, 2025. This is episode 108. If you're watching this live and you think they're starting a bit late, yeah, that'll be on me. Sorry about that. If you're watching this on the replay, no problems. No problems at all. On today's show, the launch of Tesla's Model Y Performance, the first true V4 supercharger, and automakers' reactions to the end of federal incentives, much, much more. Big news show today. It's Martin here from the EV News Daily podcast. Today, we're joined by Dominic Yoni, longtime EV journalist and host of the YouTube channel Drive Electric with Dominic, and Tom's on his travels. So we have a special guest, Christopher Bow, host of the Bow Family EV YouTube channel and the Turn Down for What podcast, also F1 50 Lightning owner as well. So Tom might not be here, but the F-150 Lightning owners are represented. Hey, Chris, welcome back. Thank you for joining us this week.
Awesome to be here again. Happy Friday, fellas.
Happy Friday. Now, we asked you on because amongst many things, you tried out the first actual V4 supercharger, but we'll get to that in a minute. What a tease. First of all, let's talk about the new Model Y Performance. It debuted a so-called paper launch. Well, it doesn't matter how they launched it, if you ask me. It went on sale before the end of the federal tax credit disappeared on September 30th. Significance because if you were able to lock in an order of the new Tesla Model Y Performance, got your order in, non-refundable $250, well, then you're in the queue and you should get it before the end of the year as well. Doesn't matter when it arrives, though, as long as you can claim back that $7,500 federal tax credit. Now, tech specs don't have them. It's been on sale in the EU since August, so 510 horsepower, probably a bit more than the version we get. 306 miles EPA, 3.3 seconds, 0 to 60, peak charging power, 250 kilowatts. That's the stat sheet, done and dusted. And besides the regular software, it does appear, apart from your track modes where you can do the torque split and stuff like that, some really extra, well, we think bonuses with bidirectionality, but we'll get into it. Chris, your family added a Model Y refresh to your garage lately. I maintain one of the best electric vehicles you can buy. That refresh is so good. Not a performance, but lots in common. So, Chris, what do you think that buyers of this will appreciate from the one that you've got?
So we actually did the older model for my wife. We took advantage of out here. They had great lease deals on the older model. So we got rid of the gas Ford Edge and picked up the Model Y for $260 a month, zero down, which is pretty darn hard to get better than.
Say that price again.
$260 a month, zero down. And my wife was already spending $200 a month on gas. So, and I have solar and I overproduce the solar. So, you know, the way gas prices are in California, it was kind of a no brainer for us. So, it was quite a search. But we finally found one, and I have a whole video process on that on my page, but on my site channel, whatever you want to call it. But yeah, it was exciting to get. And I think that the big thing with the Y is that it is kind of, you know, California, especially where you have so many commuters, and especially, you know, it comes in some cases with FSD as a trial. And I did the other day, I took me from home to work and work to home on FSD, even though it's got hardware 3 and the one that I had completely flawlessly. And it's just an amazing experience, you know, coming from the Lightning. It's not nearly as comfortable. It's not nearly as quiet. But coming from the Edge, it's better on both regards. So it's a matter of perspective, right? It, depending on what, I don't think it's as comfortable or quiet as the Mach-E, but I think it is better than any gas car you'll ever have. And the performance, you know, anytime you're getting into a Tesla is fantastic. And the software is unmatched. I mean, it, when we pull up to our driveway, the garage door opens. When we pull out of the driveway, it closes. The navigation is, you know, superb. Trying to find charging on a trip, she's going to be going to Disneyland next week, and for her to be able to just plug in at any point is going to be seamless. So as her first EV, it was a no-brainer. So I always say that, you know, I am brand agnostic. I'm all about the movement, and I will recommend, I think, the EV that fits the purpose. And so for her, the Model Y, especially at that value, I mean, it couldn't be beat. I think the performance brings things to another level, but that's, you know, that's not for me. That's not for her. That's for more of an enthusiast that's going to get out there and do some track time and want to go through the canyons, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of the, you know, the new model, the new performance version going on sale just before the federal tax credit ended, Dom, really important for them to get that in just in time. But I guess it, you know, any earlier, Dom, would have been just, you know, so much. They did all they could. There would have been reasons they didn't go online earlier. But yeah, I mean, just fantastic that some people somewhere would have got the federal tax credit on that.
Yeah, I'm not sure why they didn't do it earlier, though. So it sounds like they only did it in like the last part of the last day. Like, one article I read said that they offered it for 5 hours, the last 5 hours of September 30th. But I think I saw some emails. I think I got an email about it a little earlier in the day than that. I think like 3 o'clock. Anyway, it's kind of odd that they didn't offer this like, you know, a few days before. You know, I mean, they've known the 30th was coming and it was a cutoff, right? Yeah. So, like, I'm not sure why limited their ability to get sales for the last quarter, or in leases at least. For a few days, a week. I mean, 2 weeks.
There has to be a really legitimate reason that they, like, yeah, somebody right. forgot to do it, right?
Well, I think it's not that. I think they were in touch with the IRS, and maybe it was just a matter of the communications back and forth with them to make sure, you know, they could actually make this offer and everything would be legit. Right. So people, all they had to do was like make their. We got some noise there in the background. Sounds like an airplane taking off. Maybe that's Tom coming in for a landing here. I believe he's in a plane right now. That's why I say.
I muted myself there. I am under the flight path of the Oakland airport. So out here in California in the morning. So I had to mute myself when I hear the planes going over.
But you don't fly yourself. There's no temptation to get up and do some light aircraft for you.
I used to fly Cessnas actually back in the early 2000s. But
no way.
EVs are my cheaper hobby, but yeah, I've done some flight time around the area in a Cessna, old days from Oakland and San Jose airports in Napa and stuff. Yeah, I've done some flight time, but yeah,
well, not to derail the conversation or anything, but
Dom, derail all you like, Dom. That's fine.
But like, okay, so what about electric airplanes? Like, just take those two things and like put them together, like peanut butter and jelly. And
yeah,
you have a sandwich or peanut butter and chocolate.
Yeah, there's like Whisper Aero and stuff out there, and it's always the hard part, right? If the idea of these planes is that they have to be really light, like Cessnas are like tin cans, man, and they've got to be, in order to fly, you've got to be so light in order to do it, and the batteries are so heavy, and so they just don't go very far. There's a couple, you know, EV. There's been early on, the Lightning had this whole thing back on the East Coast where they had an electric plane that went from airport to airport, and it was recharged by Ford Lightnings at these different airports. So they've done them.
Right. Are you familiar with Pipistrel?
Not at the top of my head, but
I believe that's the plane that they use. It's originally from Slovenia, and I think they got bought up by a Textron now, but they've been working on electric airplanes for, man, I feel like it's been a good 10 years, and they have like a little trainer, basically very basic plane. I think that's the main electric product at the moment. But
it'll definitely happen. I think as battery technology improves and gets cheaper, especially if you get to some of these solid state options, and it's coming for light aircraft to be sure.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And the EV, so go ahead. Sorry.
And eVTOL is something that lots of people are spending money on, but is as yet unproven. But electric vertical takeoff and landing in big urban areas, it's obviously going to start at the high end of high net worth individuals. But if you can save an hour stuck in traffic of maybe getting to the outskirts of the city to then get on your private jet, it always, you know, all things start at the top before it cascades down. But yeah, lots of investment. Whether it works or not, it's an unproven business model. The technology's unproven, let alone the business model. But eVTOL has got so much going for it. As battery technology improves, that's not to say that people have been trying it and those companies going bust. But there's a few that have been making the headlines, working their way towards FAA approval. Archer Aviation's one of them.
Archer, that's the one I was thinking of. I love how the audience too is so great and worldwide that people are like, oh yeah, it's this. They're right here in Sylvania. It's so awesome.
Yeah.
So yeah, Urban's a longtime viewer, and we appreciate having him in the audience.
And also Mike as well. Mike, the car geek, should be called the car expert, because Mike knows everything. And
he does.
So whatever the battery technology, whether it's solid state or whatever that is, it will start with aviation first, because that's where the biggest benefit will come in terms of weight savings and being able to get that technology, pardon the pun, off the ground. Sorry, I knew that was
nice.
Coming.
Nicely done.
I knew it was coming.
Speaking of Archer, so we did an interview with the CEO or CTO, one of the co-founders of Archer. Anyway, and they just, and that was like last, it's been a while, that was at in Abu Dhabi a year and a half ago or something. But they just finished a test flight in the United States. They're still working on getting their certification here in the U.S., but they just finished their test flight. And they hit like a 7,000 foot altitude, which is like their max so far. They've gone farther. I forget how far they've gone actually off the top of my head, but they've done some flights with testing out top speeds and then comfortable distances they can go, and then now altitude. So hopefully we'll have eVTOL certifications happening and kind of see if that can actually be a viable transportation, it's kind of an odd duck in a lot of ways. A lot of it sounds ideal, but then they're also not quiet. And then there's been issues like when I met them in Abu Dhabi at that conference, there was some demonstrations of eVTOLs, right? And one unmanned one, luckily, did this little loop de loop and ended up, falling in the water. And then a couple of weeks ago, there was a crash, an air show, two eVTOLs. I believe it was an automaker. Oh, I think it was the Xiaopeng
eVTOL. It was in China. EVTOLs. Yeah, it was in China.
Yeah, and they had they bumped together, I guess, in the air and came down. And, there were people in them, and, no one was killed or anything. But
Yeah, some of these things sound really cool and Jetson-like, and then you start to realize, imagine the sound of drones. Only louder, only 10,000 of them above your head.
Above your house.
Right. You know what I mean? And imagine how people kind of freak out some about like FSD and that kind of automation and trust. And now imagine them 1,000 feet, 5,000 feet in the air. It almost has to be automated. You almost have to take it out of controls of humans in some way. So, drone delivery and stuff has been long promised, and that's still kind of out there, not, unrealized. And I would think you'd have to realize it first with like an Amazon, for example, and then start to see it slowly make its way. It's one of those fun aspirational things to dream about. I'm just not sure. I kind of put it in the bucket of hydrogen where it's long talked about. And I just don't know. I don't know if I'm being that old man yells at clouds and I don't know. I don't see it. But
it's always good to have some amount of skepticism. There's nothing wrong with like healthy skepticism.
Right. I take full responsibility for this digression, which I thoroughly enjoyed, but I'm just going to pull it back in. I'm going to pull the rope back in and talk about vehicle to load. So the new Model Y performance confirmed by Tesla, vehicle to load, vehicle to home bidirectional charging was a Reddit thing, not a Tesla thing. Of course, Cybertruck is the first one to do proper vehicle to home, full integration, but it's not cheap. This information though was shared on Reddit by a buyer who posted, hearing the news from a Tesla employee, that's never a good start. Going to Reddit to hear that somebody said something once. But either way, let's go with it. Vehicle to load, that's fine. That's lots of EVs have that. It's great that Tesla do that now. And it'll be a decent amount of power that you can pull out 120 volts, 20 amps on AC with the Tesla outlet adapter. Tesla didn't say V to H, but vehicle to home is really interesting. So Cybertruck has it. with PowerShare. So maybe it won't be the full breadth of that. This is the post you can see on screen if you're watching the video version of this podcast. And so not officially called PowerShare, so maybe it's not the Cybertruck solution. There's been, I think, some investigation into the model. You know, Teslas can do bidirectionality. There's hardware out there that will pull power out of the main charging port of any Tesla, right? So it's not magically locked down technology. But vehicle to load makes perfect sense. Vehicle to home gets really interesting. Vehicle to grid, then you've got to start putting some funky hardware in to make sure that you don't send juice back down the grid if there's a power cut and people are working on fixing the grid. It's all a fixable problem. It's all that's years and years old, but it's not the work of a moment if you want to put it in your house. But Chris, vehicle to home, are you tempted by that? I've got the solar panels on the roof. I've got the home battery. I'm fully signed up. I bore everybody about it. It saves me a fortune. Don't get me wrong, it's expensive, but we just moved into the house. We're between two great schools, so we're here for 10, 12 years. We amortize that big cost over the... We don't want to move again for a while, so for us it makes sense. I'm not pretending it's cheap technology, but all of a sudden if you buy an EV and it's just the wall box that you've got to put in and you can start running your house overnight when the sun goes down, maybe you can even charge your car at work, you know, and be a bit cheeky. Are you tempted by vehicle-to-home stuff, Chris?
So desperately tempted. One of the things is here in California where we would have rolling blackouts, and then, you know, going through the COVID years where my wife's a teacher and she was teaching out of the house. And one of the big paranoias was power outages. I had a propane generator, and one of the big attractions to the lightning was that I could run the house off the lightning. And so I have like layers of X to home type stuff. I have a power wall, which is my immediate power on, right? When we get a power cut, Powerwall is instant. You don't even know it, but it's limited in terms of its size, 13 kilowatt hours. And then, so that gets me the initial kind of the power cut has happened. Then I plug in the lightning for more of long-term, and that'll last me for a week. You know what I mean? Which is amazing. But that is more of a direct connect, you know, using a manual transfer switch, a little bit inelegant, you're not very tech forward, right? Like Tesla has this amazing technology where it combines both. It's instant on, because it goes through kind of a power wall in that same gateway that they use for power wall, which is fantastic. It's so beautiful. And it uses the DC and or the AC. I'm speaking crazy. It uses the DC to AC that the truck already has, is what I'm trying to say. So it's just packaged so well, whereas like what Tom has and Ford offers and Chevy offers, you've got to throw another whole box on your wall. And those companies, they won't integrate it with existing solar, Martin. So like I've got solar, you've got solar. They won't intermesh these two systems. They don't want to touch theirs. They don't want to mix in warranties. So now you've got parallel systems running, parallel things to troubleshoot. It's a hot mess. They're $10,000+ each. It's really cumbersome and inelegant, and nobody has the same standard. So Ford can't interact with Chevy, which can't interact with Tesla, which can't interact with a third party. I dream of the day when any EV can plug into any of a dozen, and Grizzly can offer their vehicle to home, to grid, and so can Emporia, and so can Tesla. I mean, to me, that's the dream that I would love to see, with some type of uniform standard. That's where I think we need to get. I think it's crazy that we don't have a simple outlet plug in a Tesla already, which I'm, of course, remarkably spoiled by like the 11 that are in the Lightning or whatever the number is. And even the Gravity, the Lucid Gravity of all things, that doesn't have a 120 volt outlet in the back. And you know, when I was out in Europe with Romy Norway William and the Zeeker, it has a plug. Like these other out in Europe, plugs seem much more common than or at least the Chinese vehicles. They have a lot of these things, they exist, and it's amazing to me that these American cars haven't done it. Kia, of course, has had that adapter that plugs in back there for a long time. So why are we so slow to adapt and to adopt? Health and safety, you know, natural disasters, the stuff that happened in Texas not too long ago, the hurricanes that go through, you know, Florida every year and come up the East Coast. So many, you know, natural disasters like fires out here in California. So many different examples where it's so useful. I'm in for it all day.
Great. Yeah, me too. Completely here for it. And especially when we can start using those big energy stores on our driveway like you do with the Lightning. I'm absolutely, yeah, I just want to play with it. So over here, we have our energy supplier is called Octopus. They're in the US as well. I think they're in Texas, maybe other places as well. They're a global company now. They're our biggest energy provider over here. And I'm with them. They've just started doing a turnkey monthly payment where you get a BYD vehicle, I forget which one, and then you get the hardware needed and you get them on their tariff, and it's proper vehicle to grid, and it's all fully integrated, whether that's being rolled out, they've announced it. I'll need to find out whether they've got that sort of system in action anywhere. Let's talk a little bit about what you've been up to this week then, Chris. The reason why we invited you on, really big news for fast charging. So Tesla superchargers have an upgrade. They've kind of had some upgrades already. And if I get this wrong, you can correct me. The comments definitely will correct me. So there's V3 superchargers, which is the dispenser looks like the regular one we've always seen. And then there's the big gray boxes, sometimes behind a hedge or a fence, which is a cabinet, right? And that's where the heavy lifting is done. Then Tesla rolled out the dispensers that were taller with longer cables, technically called V4 dispensers. Some people refer to them, I believe, as V3 Plus. So the V3 cabinet with all the long cable, so third-party cars can turn up and not block a space. Then they upgraded, I believe, some cabinets, or they did something that I think people called V3.5. Again, please correct me. Which was enabling some faster speeds, maybe 325 kilowatts for a brief time, but really not over the terms of minutes of charging, not a massive deal breaker. It ramped down pretty quickly to get some faster charging. But this is a big deal because it's proper V4. So it's the dispensers and it's the cabinets, all the latest Tesla goodies working together. It's 500 kilowatts. Chris, you went and, well, we're watching the video online right now. What did you make of these, this proper V4 supercharging?
Yeah, I think it's so exciting. And yet let's temper the enthusiasm because it is... Oh. Yeah, it's one of those things where it's very much like when I think the best comparison I've heard is it's like when EA first rolled out their 350 kilowatt chargers, but nobody could use them because people were still having 50 kilowatt Leafs. And you're like, why are you rolling this out? Right. I think I would compare it similar to that. So they are capable of up to 500 kilowatts, but unlike Alpatronic, where each and every one of those is a 400 kilowatt standalone unit, this is very much a satellite distributed model in the style of, say, a ChemPower, for example. And so there are, in this case, there are two 1 megawatt cabinets, and these are very much like the Tesla Semi cabinets. The Tesla Semi can do 1.2 megawatts. These are 1 megawatt, so slightly smaller. And this is, in an engineering way, it is a different approach than Tesla has done in the past. In the past, they have shared a DC connection and distributed the DC power amongst all of the cabinets. And they did not use, you know, they changed from V2 to V3 in that they don't have individual modules the way that traditional Alpatronics might, right? Where there's all the different modules and depending on how many modules you have. You know, for example, in Electrify America, if it's derated, you might have different modules that have failed within the charger. So these big cabinets have 16 modules now, and those now are sharing amongst the 16 chargers, and it's distributing power throughout them. So the way that it, the granularity is more limited in how it distributes. And if you've got all 16 being used, you're getting about 150 kilowatts max out of each one. So to start with, the only way to get 500 kilowatts to begin with is, you know, you'd have to have like half of the stations not being used, which happens certainly. Like, though, you know, we never had more than three or four for the hours that we were there playing around. And you know, the Tesla charging curve is famous for only giving you a peak for, you know, a cup of coffee. So I think they're gonna taper off pretty quickly, even if there were five or six plugged in. And the other thing is, right now, it's only going to help you if you have 1,000. They're all 1,000 kilowatt capable. So 1,000 kilowatt. I'm sorry, 1,000 volt capable. So it's only going to help you if you have an 800 volt capable vehicle. So if you've got a Lightning like me or a 400 volt you know, Chevy or the Model 3 or the Model Y. It's going to make absolutely no difference, save for the exception of the thermal management, right? If you've had an experience where you've plugged into a V3 and you've hit your thermals and it's overheated and been derated because of heat, it will perform better because the cable is liquid immersed liquid, right? It's the cable is covered with oil or whatever inside, so it cools it off better and it maintains temperature better, so you'll maintain your charge curve better. But it's not going to give you any better peak charging at all. And for the Cybertruck, it's got to be under 4% to start with. Wow. Recommend zero, literally zero. Like the people that I saw getting the best results had to pull in with 0% and had to precondition, which are both hard things to do. So the only people I saw that were able to do it had to pull up and then like run their heater. And one person charged another vehicle off the back of their Cybertruck in order to get it down to zero. But you couldn't precondition the battery really easily because that supercharger is not yet on the navigation. So you had to pick an adjacent city's supercharger. If you did all of these tricks and things, you could get it to hit 500 kilowatts for about 10 seconds. Wow. And then as soon as the highest I personally saw was Marcus, who is a YouTuber out in Northern California. He drove a couple hours to come down and try it out. He plugged in right after we made this video. He hit 483 kilowatts and he did a whole charge curve tracking using the Tessie app. And I don't know, Dominic, if you had that or not, but it was really interesting to see how that turned out, because what it showed was it made like literally 1 minute of difference in terms of your charging time, because you got that 1 minute of peak hit. I think where it's going to really make a difference, and I don't want to underplay it because it is important, because, you know, here's some of the graphs. So this is the temperature. So you can see here that it reaches that 150 degrees temperature where it starts to kind of derate a little bit. It reaches it much, much later in the charge session compared to a V3. And that's that pink line at the very top. So it takes much longer before it hits that compared to a V3 cabinet, which is fantastic. So you're going to get that curve longer, but you can see how quickly it dropped down. And that's the normal Tesla charging curve. They're designed, I think, purposely that way. They want you to come in out of spec style with single digit. And then this is going to be the charge curve, basically, with the bottom blue line showing a V3 cabinet and the top one showing your V4 cabinet. So you get that initial, you know, 483 kilowatt jump. But then, you know, by the time you get to 7-8%, it comes right back down to the exact same thing that it was, and it follows the exact same curve it used to be. So you've got that's that initial, amazing. yeah.
That's amazing that they just line up so closely.
That's perfect like lineup, that's, isn't it? Yeah, like literally, you know, unless you don't want that big bump of power at the beginning, it's, as you say, it's not a game changer for even the Cybertruck.
Yeah, and you can see a couple areas where the red does exceed the blue there, and like the 24, 20, 28, right? Because that's where the thermals have kicked in for the V3 and suppressed it a little bit, and the V4 is still going a little bit more, but it's just such a little bit. But I think now the great thing, of course, with Tesla, as we all know, is, and one of the things and why they put it where they did is because it's right next to the engineering team. So the engineering team was literally out there answering some questions with their laptops, like doing things. And so it's presumed that at some point in later in Q4, they are going to open it up to other, like I couldn't plug my Lightning in. So they will open it up to other folks later this year in Q4 to the GMs of the world. So we can see what Silverado is going to do. We can see what Lucid Gravity, man, I cannot wait. As soon as it opened, I texted Corey over at Lucid. I'm like, Corey, I need a Gravity just long enough to drive it across the bridge, test this, and I'll bring it right back. And then I was like, oh, never mind. I found out we can't even use it. So I called another friend, Joe, with the Cybertruck. Yeah, but I'm excited to see the Gravity on it, and that's where it's, you know, the Taycan, right? What are these things going to do? What's the charge curve going to look like? But Tesla can, over the air, update the charging profile at some point when they figure out what limits they can push on the Cybertruck. But Model Y, Model X, Model S, Model 3, it's going to make absolutely zero impact to them.
Yeah. They, when they put this out on Twitter this this week, they put a picture of a Model 3 with it. And I'm like, whoever's running social media on that day for Tesla, just use a picture of a Cybertruck, because you can tweet, hey, look, it's open. Don't use a picture of Model 3. Kind of pointless to do that. So I'm sure an innocent mistake. Yeah, when they open these up, that's interesting. And what I love about this is we are back to talking about Tesla, which I think Tesla is at its very, very best when it gets people talking about and raving about.
Marketing.
Like things like this. So does it make a huge difference? No. Are we raving about it? Absolutely, yes. Are they charging at twice the speed in China? Yes. But it doesn't matter, because it's like the BYD are going to bring their megawatt charging to Europe next year, single cable on CCS2 connector as well. So we don't know when and where. We don't know what's going to be the first location. There's no cars that can do it. They've got the Han L and the Tang L in China that charge at 1,000 kilowatts, but you've got to use two cables. You've got to back in between the two chargers, and it's on the back, the back of the car on either side, and you've got to plug in like that. So this technology is easily bested right now. It's been out for months in China at double the speed. But what I love about this is Tesla getting back to, getting away from all the noise that's defined 2025, which I really hate. All the politics, the noise around Tesla that has just gotten in the way of this kind of stuff. And it just gets people back talking about what they do well. The charging is interesting. I think the Model 3, the Model Y performance is also really big news this week, because that just kind of ticks that little box. It's the world's best-selling electric vehicle. You know, vehicle to load is all good. Vehicle to home would be even better. But these little things that, and big things in some cases that they do, it just gets back to a positive story around electric vehicles. Because like it or not, Tesla defines EVs in so many ways. Now, in the US, it really is the EV market. I think there was data this week. I think Cox said it's like 36 or 38% of the EV market now, which is tiny. Yeah. It's the lowest in 8 years, I think. But that was not official data and what have you. But that's understandable, because there's more cars coming along and there's more choice now. So Tesla's market share is always going to drop. They had a record quarter driven by the United States. It's down in Europe, down in China by 6%, 6.5% year to date. Countries like France are down 40, 50%. But in the US, that bring forward of the federal tax credit, you know, urgency gave them a record quarter, and I love that it's back. It gives a positive bit of news around electric vehicles. Like it or not, for many people, EVs are Tesla, and Tesla are obviously EVs. So I love it. Sorry, Dom.
I was just going to say, just shy of 500,000 deliveries in this quarter, like across our global operations, which that's almost 2 million vehicles a year. Which is, I mean, it won't be that, because this is like a record quarter, like you said. All the demand is pulled forward, and still, like in China, they're down 8% year over year. In Europe, I guess they're seeing some success in a couple countries, like Norway has had another record a lot of Tesla sales there this last quarter. They're up to like 98 something percent.
Yeah,
98.3 BEV. That's pure BEV.
And a third of their vehicles are Teslas that are sold out there in Norway. Yeah. And it just it shows that if he could focus on the technology and it would sell.
He can't focus on that. He's just lucky that like no one's looking at Twitter so much anymore, because it's still a nonstop fountain of garbage over there.
I think we got sucked into that, and I certainly had to report on things earlier in the year when, on my podcast, because it's a daily news podcast about electric vehicles, and there's the CEO of a big EV company making global headlines. Alongside the US president. So I had to talk about it, but I'd get emails every day from people being like, you got this wrong. You shouldn't be talking about it. He hates democracy. He's a Nazi. And yet when I do read those emails out, I get people being like, this is an EV podcast, not a politics podcast. And you're like, I know I get all of those arguments, and I completely agree with, I think, just about everybody. He appeared at a far right rally 2 weeks ago in London with some really debatable political figures on stage that have said really abhorrent stuff about people who don't look like you. Like, these are like the worst of humanity, and up shows the CEO of a Lincoln Electric car company. Now, I didn't talk about it then because, I mean, where does it get me? But I just love the fact that we can talk about Tesla things that are exciting. It's technology. It gets away from, and I'm not running away from the issues, but I want to talk about EVs and nothing else. So,
And I think one of the things is that it sometimes it covers up the stuff that's less exciting, but that is important. So even with like these V4 cabinets, it's not exciting, but what's important is that now, you've got these cabinets. You can have one cabinet can power eight instead of two cabinets powering eight. Mm-hmm. And it's the same cabinet that is used for Tesla Semi, which Tesla Semi is about to ramp up. So in terms of manufacturing process, right, in terms of scale, as Tesla Semi starts to ramp up in scale and as you try to get more of these V4s out there into the, you know, out there for customers to use, it's going to make manufacturing easier because it's the same case. It's the same modules. You know, there's more of them for Tesla Semi, but it makes the manufacturing process more streamlined. Their base of them is a little bit different. I show that in the video, how the base is going to make it easier to deploy. They've taken away Magic Dock out of these. They've taken away the card reader out of these. They have like a centralized payment terminal, which is one less part, one less thing to fail. And so there's a couple of these little strategic things that this first location, they're trying out, they're testing out, they're, and so it's going to make presumably deployment easier. A lot of people ask about, well, are they going to go back and upgrade? You were talking about, Martin, these ones that were kind of halvesies. You know, I've got the V3 cabinets, but I've got the V4 dispensers. I haven't really seen that much with Tesla. They don't usually pull things out of the ground and go back and put new stuff in as much. They tend to expand. I've seen them take like where they had V2s and then expand V3s. But I haven't seen them like rip out the old V2s. So I feel like they don't usually take something out unless it's failed or they've lost a lease. It's more of that they just going forward will start to deploy these things. But, you know, if they can make them cheaper, more efficiently, use less hardware, I think that's all boring but exciting things for what can come. It can be this ubiquitous technology that gets out there and can support all EVs better. And importantly, I didn't even mention this. I don't know why, especially for people like me. What's really important is for folks that have the charge plug in the wrong location. I'm not taking up two charging spots anymore with these V4s. I can pull in and connect and stop irritating my friends in the Tesla community. And so there's a lot of upside as these things get out there more into the world. And so this other stuff distracts from the importance of, you know, what these steps mean, you know, and even though, it doesn't mean much for the Model 3 or Model Y owner today, you know, into 26, 27, as everybody goes NACS, as everybody starts to go 800 volts, as I think it does matter in important ways.
Yeah. And there's a lot of negativity in the last 3 days around the EV market. You know, I do have to mention that only a few years ago, Ford were completely, you know, all in on EVs. And I would hate to be the CEO of a car company because you've got to return shareholder value every 3 months. And they're doing a difficult dance. But this week, Jim Farley saying, well, maybe the EV market will go from 10% to 5% in the US. And kind of heartbreaking because when someone that important makes such a prediction, it's almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy. Like, well, here's the boss of the company saying it, the market's going to halve. I'm just not convinced.
Let's not manifest that.
Yeah, like I'm not convinced about that. There's certainly been some short-term plays that they've done. GM and Ford did a really funky thing in consultation with the IRS, by the way. So what Ford and GM's finance arms did was Ford and GM have bought dealer stock back. The finance arms of those companies have bought the dealer stock back before the expiration of the credit, which means they get the $7,500 tax credit on. So this is leasing. This is the lease loophole. Dealers can then offer the leases on those cars to retail customers as usual until all that stock is gone. So some fancy footwork there. I don't know if other car companies did it. Maybe they didn't talk about it publicly. But the majority of EVs sold in the US have been leased because it was a way to get around some of that restrictive eligibility rules on the incentive program and, you know, the component parts of those EVs. Reuters reporting that they did it in, you know, full cooperation with the IRS. So it's no, you know, you're not going to get stuck with anything if you think, oh, they pulled a fast one here. Chris, you were saying you leased. Was it a lease you did on your Model Y? Like, leasing is so popular in the US. This is important.
Yeah, it was a 2-year lease, which for me brings me from 25 to 27, which is exactly when Ford is supposed to launch their new platform in theory. I figure by 27, R2 will be out with their not launch edition. I know they're going to launch next year in 26, but I'm not getting that first launch edition. That's not in my budget. As you know, I'm a FedEx guy and my wife's a teacher. We're not going launch edition.
And you live in California.
Yeah. So it's, we're targeting 27 is the year. You know, to your point, Martin, people have kind of pivoted in those ways. So the lease really works out well. And yeah, what Ford and GM have announced, and maybe others have done, is they've taken Ford and GM Financial, Ford Motor Credit is I think their official thing. They went out to dealers and offered them, they said, hey, by September X, you need to tell us if you want to do this. We will go to your inventory, and it can be either what is sitting on your inventory right now that you think won't move, or what you have on order that is in transport. And we will buy it and we will put a down payment on it. We will get into a binding contract with you. And then we can lease those out using Ford Motor Credit and GM Financial to customers through the end of the year. And you can apply that credit. And we will essentially put that initial down payment on the lease term. And you can then extend that $7,500 tax credit into the offer. Now, what's complicated about that is when you go to the Ford website, you try to find these deals, you really can't. If you try to go to the deals and you go to the lease offers, it says check your local dealer. Because if I go to a dealer in California and I've got 8 Ford dealers around me here in the Bay Area, different dealers may have said yes or no, or may have had different inventories, and Dominic's may be different, and somebody out in Texas could be different, and Ohio might be different, and someone in the middle of Kansas may not have any EVs or could care less about EVs and doesn't want any part of it. And so trying to find these is going to be difficult and challenging, and that's one of the big things. Even when I was looking for something for my wife as her first EV, we looked at like Honda Prologue, we looked at Volkswagen, and I reached out to some of the deals that I found online, and I said, do you have this? And I couldn't get a straight answer, and it was so difficult. Whereas when I went to Tesla, it was, here's your price, click this button, you put $500 as a deposit, and we will tell you when it's available, and within minutes. Right. It was so simple and easy. And then you walk up with your app and you the other companies need to catch up with this stuff. So people are going to be able to probably find locally advertised deals and specials that are remarkable. But when I personally looked this morning, actually in preparation for the show, the things I saw locally was like $4,000 down, $700 a month on a Lightning. That's not remarkable at all. But I had seen things in the past where it was like, you know, a couple thousand down and like $325 a month or something really low. Okay. So I think it's going to have to depend on each market, each dealer, you know, each location, what people are able to find. But there will be some out there from GM and Ford, at least.
Yeah. I mean, Ford tried to solve this a couple of years ago, didn't they? And the dealers association is so strong. And they just, they got a good thing going. So,
Tom talked about that, about how hard when he was in that meeting, he was at that meeting that he talked about. Yeah.
That would have been game changing to be able to go online, get your local Ford price, click a button, and then go get your new Ford. And it is difficult because their products are good. As you say, they've just got nothing to sell. So, he's a very important person to listen to. On the other, and they've got nothing new to sell you for a long time. So put that into perspective. The Mach-E's brilliant, Lightning is fantastic. Go get their existing products because they're great. Oh, by the way, the Transit sells all right, and we've got tons of them over here. But it's not like Ford are about to launch a new model. So he can speak perhaps slightly differently than maybe other CEOs. Other deals, other things have happened this week. Hyundai just took $9,500 off the Ioniq 5 with the tax credit going, which bizarrely you would think is good news.
$9,800.
I just saw loads of anger online from people being like, you had that in your margin that overnight you could just swipe that off a car. Like, come on. And then also Nissan said, they're not going to go ahead with making EVs in the US at the Canton plant.
Canton, I think. Mississippi.
Right. So, and they're like, well, we'll make hybrids there instead. So, a difficult week in terms of the positivity around electric vehicles.
Yeah, I mean, we've got all. I've got all these. We've got all the different manufacturers, all their approaches to what's happening after the passing of the federal incentive. Yeah, and everyone's taking a different approach, and it's a bit all over the place. But there are some, you know, there's some good deals, and plus, actually, you need to remember too. Besides all these things, there's also state incentives. There's also utilities. A lot of the utilities have programs to install your charger, or if not, like Ford has just extended. Chris was telling me yesterday it's extended its Ford Power Promise pledge, which gives you a free charger and installation with your EV, right? So, I mean, you can't. It's really an important part of the whole picture, you know, to have your station installed at your house, and you know, Ford's taking care of that for you. So maybe it's not like $7,500 from the government, but it's you know, it's definitely something. It's an encouragement and incentive.
Yeah. Stellantis is extending its credit, $7,500 equivalent on their EVs and plug-in hybrids in inventory vehicles, by the way. So,
right.
Wagoneer S and Dodge Charger Daytona EV discounted by the amount of the federal incentive for a while. Plug-in hybrids as well. Stellantis seems focused on pivoting to hybrids and Hemis in the United States. We've talked about Stellantis discontinuing the Dodge Charger Daytona RT, and now we hear that the 800-volt, 800-horsepower Banshee trim has been cancelled ahead of production. I've mentioned Nissan already dropping the Ariya from the US in favor of the Leaf, which will be made in Japan and imported now, not made in the United States. So, yeah, we've not heard much from Kia or Genesis in terms of their leasing prices and price adjustments. But the Ioniq 5, $9,800 off the SEL trim in rear-wheel drive and all-wheel drive. $9,000 off other trims as well. Lucid extending their $7,500 incentive for Gravity SUV buyers despite the tax credit cut off. Also offering special deals on its Air sedan right now, $2,000 off of that, but they've been around a little while. They should expire October 31st. And Rivian lease prices, now that the federal tax credit has ended, clarifying those. They're altering their lease prices on the dual motor standard trims, reducing them on R1S and R1T. Some of the higher trims actually increasing. So, before we move on, RJ Scarin just talked about the tax credits going, not being the end of the world. He said it sort of shakes the tree a little bit, and it'll it'll force people to look a little bit harder at their buying decisions. And he says, well, we've got the best EVs, so I'm happy for people to judge the EV on the vehicle and not be skewed by money being taken off a car. They also have very expensive vehicles there as well, of course, so less impacted as a proportion of the price. Before we move on, Chris, just to get your take on the kind of temperature in the US. I'm thousands of miles away on EVs at the moment. You've been reading the news, soaking it up. What is the general feeling this week around electric vehicles in the US?
Man, I feel like the people that love them will continue to love them. I think the people that continue to intermingle politics will continue to feel about people politically the way they feel. And I do think there is a real struggle with the way that America is so big, and especially in the middle, in the heart of America, as people drive a lot of trucks, which are the number one selling vehicle in America, they want and they are used to 600 to 900 miles of range. And until EVs get to that, and a big thing for Americans being stubborn, God, I'm being told I'm loud. I'm trying to back off the mic.
Don't worry. I can tell you that. That's fine. I can tell you down this end. Sorry, no worries.
Yeah, I think a big part of Americans is we don't want to be told what to do. We don't want to be mandated to. And I think about things like cell phones when they first came out, and they were these big brick monstrosities. And you know, when I hear people talk about their hatred for EVs, I'm like, it sounds ridiculous to me. You know, EVs are a little bit more expensive, and they are starting out as, you know, things that only certain people can afford, and it's better if you have the ability to plug in your house. But eventually they will hit the masses just like cell phones are, and they will get much better just like cell phones did. But you know, the big difference was that the market dictated when people switched. And so I want the incentives. I think the incentives are good. We have more than incentivized the other industries. So let's do incentives. But the idea of mandates, I think, really turns people off. And I think that adds a degree that just needs to go away. So I think getting politically maybe a little bit of space between that vitriol is maybe a good thing. And hopefully come midterms and some other things, if we can get some common sense and some changing of the narrative back to the technology and to the way this makes lives easier with vehicle to grid, vehicle to home, a better experience. If we can get there, if this can force manufacturers to be more efficient and more realistic with their pricing, Ford in 27 focused on lower cost EVs, Rivian with R2, lower cost EVs, Gravity is great vehicle, but I can never buy it. You know, our friend Corey hopefully will come out with a midsize that's more affordable, GM with a new Bolt. If it forces these manufacturers to play in the marketplace in a more affordable way, because as fun as these new exciting vehicles are that are $80,000 to $120,000, I don't think any of us are buying them.
Not me.
Right. So that's what we need. We need something to excite people in a way that's affordable. And maybe this gives us, you know, the next 12 to 18 months are maybe less exciting, but hopefully in the long term it works. My question is, China's already doing exciting things, and how long can we keep them offshore until we either, you know, have them come in and dominate the market? Or I'm of the mindset now almost of let them come in like Japan. I just want them to manufacture here. Yeah. I want American jobs in American industry, and I don't care whose brand is on it. I don't care that my Toyota is a Toyota as long as it's made in Kentucky. Mm. I don't care that a BYD or a Zeekr is a Zeekr as long as it's made in Illinois. That's kind of my perspective on it. But in general, the feeling of those that don't like EV is relieved and excited that they no longer are going to be forced to have an EV, even though they were never going to be forced to begin with. Yeah. and that's the kind of the feel right now, unfortunately.
Yeah. I completely, amen to all of that. There are places that are setting a date and putting a line in the sand. The UK has one here on pure combustion. But look, by 2030 or 2035, there's going to be very few cars that you would want to be pure combustion. Because even if you really just want a hybrid, adding a teeny tiny weeny kilowatt hour battery would get you around that loophole. And then you're not driving a pure combustion car. Norway, as we've said, 98.3% pure BEV. And then everything else, plug-in hybrid, shabby hybrid. 25 petrol cars. Yeah, like 25 petrol cars. Like, it's tiny. So, like Norway's there, Sweden's 60 or 70%. And so countries will do it at their own speed. South Korea looking at 2035 this week to part of the Paris Climate Agreement. So they might put a date in the... but again, these dates enrage some people. So I just think don't put a date on it. And as Chris says, the technology will just be better. And then we'll just do it over the next however. But even a pure petrol car sold on December 31st, 2034, in 10 years' time, it's going to be on the road for 20 or 25 years. In 2055 or 2060, those cars, it just seems such a long time scale that, you know, we need to hurry up and get it done.
I think I'll just add real quick. I think what Ford is doing smartly that I think will be important is that they are going with EREV. Like their next focus is EREV, which is going to give you the electric driving experience with a little bit bigger battery than what we see in the plug-in hybrid. And whereas that's doing that whole combustion switch thing, this is going to be very much that in the way that the Chinese did it. It's that extended range EREV idea. I do think that's better. And what we see,
personally, no. Okay.
Right.
I can see where it works for trucks. Where if you have to like haul long distance, and EREV kind of makes kind of sense right now with battery technology where it is, but for like normal passenger vehicles, I kind of look at Norway. How many people are buying, you know, plug-in hybrids over there? Because if you can plug in your plug-in hybrid, you can plug in your EV, and you don't. Well, it seems like an unnecessary step. But I understand that, like, you know, a lot of people are thinking hybrids, and automakers are kind of, you know, pushing that because people feel just more comfortable having that backup. Like it's like training wheels, I guess. It's one of the things it gets compared with, but. I'm not convinced that moving, like really pivoting to EVs or plug-in hybrids is going to work out for these guys in the long run, maybe on very specific kind of models, but I don't know. Sorry to interrupt.
No. So I guess here's my thoughts on that is, so there was a point where my truck was in for a recall with Ford, and they were like, I'm sorry, the only loaner we have is an Escape. And I'm like, oh man, an Escape. This is, I'm not going to fit in an Escape, but I got to get to work. So I'll take an Escape. And I get in and it's a plug-in hybrid. And I'm like, oh my God, it's a plug-in hybrid. I'm like, did you know this was a plug-in hybrid? And the person had no clue. They've been giving this out as a loaner for months and had no clue it was a plug-in hybrid. It wasn't charged, nothing, right? So I'm like, you guys. So I take it to work and I have an e-transit at work. So I get it charged up and I drove that thing and for a week. And I drove it home back and forth all week. I drove it to my 49ers where I also work. Shout out to the 49ers who got a huge win last night. We have chargers at the stadium, at Levi's Stadium. I have charger at work. And then I went on a trip leaving San Francisco Airport. There are chargers at the parking garage at San Francisco Airport. That thing has a tiny little battery in that plug-in hybrid. I went the whole week going to Levi's Stadium, San Francisco Airport, back and forth to work, over 250 miles and never used gas in that tiny little battery. And once you realize you can do that, you're like, why am I paying for gas? Why am I letting gas go? Now, the drawback is I still very much had that kind of petrol experience with the engine being there. And you still, I think people will help them transition. And here's the thing about Americans is we've just learned with the whole leasing program with Ford and GM, we love to cheat. We are cheaters at heart. We love to get around the system and the rules. We love to not be told what to do. And so what we were doing in California was that you could get the $7,500 incentives. I don't know if it was $7,500, maybe it was $4,500. You could get some incentives if you bought a plug-in hybrid and you could get the carpool lane stickers if you bought a plug-in hybrid. So people were buying them just for the sticker to get around commuting hours and never doing anything but driving them as a gas vehicle. And so I think if you're going to sell these things, sell them as the type that you're driving them as a battery electric all the time. And the gas is only charging the electric battery, which is giving you all of the characteristics of an electric vehicle. And you're almost, it's almost like you're sneaking the medicine into your puppy's food, right? And you're getting them to fall in love with all of the things that are electric. And suddenly they're going to realize, why am I still going to a gas station? Why, what am I doing right now? Yeah. And so it's a little bit of a, you know, turning the temperature slowly, I guess. And I don't know. I guess that's my naive, optimistic hope is that the manufacturers are going to sell a bunch of these and they're going to make enough money that they can afford to then also put money into electric and it'll happen more organically than forced and it'll all work out at the end. Maybe I'm wrong.
I was having a look at the upcoming EREVs. Sorry, Dom. You mentioned they come with slightly bigger batteries. EREV, there's no definition of EREV, I think, agreed upon, as far as I know, in the industry. But it does mean a bigger battery. It often means that the engine is a generator and that you drive on the electric power. So you've got electric motors and the engine is a generator, working in its optimum rev range and things like that. The new Zeekr 9X from Geely has a 70 kilowatt hour CATL battery. The XPeng X9 has a 70 kilowatt hour pack. The new Leapmotor D16 has an 80 kilowatt hour pack. So to your point, like at what point are you just carrying around two powertrains? Like 80 kilowatt hour is what I've got in my EV that does me full time. Why would I then service an engine? Now, if I don't really lease vehicles or finance them so much, I tend to buy old used ones. But if I was leasing a car, I mean, stick an engine in it. I don't really care. Like, I got to carry it around, but I'm not going to be servicing belts and pulleys and catalytic converters and oil changes in 10 years' time and having mechanics go, oh, when you know, they give you the bill, right? So that all needs servicing in 10, 15, 20 years' time. Yeah. And those oily bits are going to break and two bits will bump into each other that they don't mean to. And that's a big old bill.
Man, at which point, thermocombobulators, man.
Right? That's terrible, right? So at which point, just drive an EV. But I completely agree that some people are like, well, I've got 2,000 kilometers on my EREV in China. So, all right. Okay, fair enough. Hey, we should move on and finish the news. It's been a big news show.
We're having fun.
It's been a big news show.
We'll keep the show a little short today.
Let's talk about the Polestar. So we mentioned Volvo EX90 gets an upgrade to 800 volts. And the Polestar 3 is also getting an update as well, which is Polestar's version. So that DNA is pretty similar. 800 volt architecture, increase in power, 350 kilowatt charging. It's got the new compute power as well. And so, you know, physically upgrading the architecture of the vehicle, makes it way more efficient. And once again, Polestar doing what Volvo did, Dom, which is saying anyone that's got one of the existing ones, come in and we'll retrofit all the new toys, the NVIDIA Drive AGX Orin processor. Now, you can't upgrade the platform. It used to be a 400-volt car. But that is, well, seems to me like going over and above what they have to do. But I'm delighted that Polestar and Volvo are doing it. It doesn't happen in China, where cars are being turned over, iterated on really quickly. It's actually a bit of a topic in China online from people really annoyed that they just bought an EV and then the next one comes out and it's better and cheaper and all those kind of things. But we talked about that recently. I think, Dom, what do you make of the Polestar following Volvo's upgrade?
Well, let me tell you, Martin. I was talking about this a little bit with our viewer here in the comments, MB Volks. He says this is probably likely only going to be able to, like the new updated versions of this, probably only going to be available at dealers in early 2026. So the change is coming, but it's going to be still a few months away. But yeah, this is a big deal, just like the Volvo EX90. Interesting. I'm not sure. I didn't notice this on the EX90 news, but on this one, the Polestar 3 gets batteries. It's batteries from CATL, and it's got a 92 kilowatt hour battery in the rear for the rear motor version, which is, I think, it's probably new. Same with the EX90, the rear wheel drive configuration is new, and they've got the new, more powerful motor to give it over 300 horsepower in the back. So that gets 92 kilowatt hours, and then the all-wheel drive versions get 106 kilowatt hour packs. So I guess they're going to keep the ranges kind of similar. You know, often like the little EV hack, if you want for range, you know, if you want the range, buy the cheap one because it's going to have a bunch more range because it's rear wheel drive or front wheel drive, not all wheel drive. So it's more efficient and will go farther, so you can spend less money and get more range generally. But it looks like Polestar's kind of heading those folks off at the pass a bit, you know, just like cutting the size of the battery so it gets, you know, a similar kind of range, I guess, to what the all-wheel drive will have. I'm not sure if we have those actual range figures yet, but I thought that was interesting. And also with the new motor in the back, the power bias goes to the rear now in the Polestar, which is, you know, just great for dynamics and handling feel. You know, when you push on the throttle in the corner, you kind of want to feel a bit of that rear bias. You know, I do, at least. I don't know.
And talking Polestar, they confirmed there's going to be a new Polestar 2. So until now, they've been going up through the numbers like an iPhone. And then this is the first time that they've said, actually, we're going to go back, and that the Polestar 2 is the cornerstone of our brand, and there's going to be a new one, which I was really surprised about.
Well, they have a new CEO, right? And so the former CEO, who is also their designer, he had said there wasn't going to be a Polestar 2 because we already did that. Why would we do it again? Well, the new guy is saying, well, it's like our most popular model, so why wouldn't we do that again? Exactly. Maybe a slightly different design, you know. Hopefully it'll be a different design, just because, I mean, I like the original Polestar 2 design. It's great. But just Polestar designers are so great at coming up with designs. I kind of like to see what they can do again, you know, in that same kind of space. I don't know. But maybe that's a bit silly, but human beings, we love novelty. We love new things, even if they're not necessarily that new, but they appear to us, new to us. So,
yeah. And then before we go, Rivian in the news this week. Again, they've been putting pictures out online, so you know they're getting close with the R2. I don't know if you saw this, Chris, but Rivian put out some R2 pictures of them. I think they were fording some water, you know. They weren't saying it was going to float or be a boat or anything, but just, you know, in other words, they're doing validation testing. They're still talking about early 2026 for R2. Are you excited for the R2? Would you consider it for your family? It's important to Rivian as well that they come into a market of vehicles that we can afford, really.
I'm 100% excited about R2. It is, I ordered it the day it was, not ordered it, reserved it.
Wow.
the moment that it became available, it is what I ultimately would like for my wife's next vehicle. I think, you know, she very much always wanted the Bronco Sport as an electric right. vehicle, but you know, Ford went and had to Ford. So we're waiting on them to get their stuff together, but we'll see what Ford comes out with in 27. That's why we did that Y lease until 27. And then I think R2, we would be looking more for the rear wheel drive, you know, R2 kind of version. We don't need all the crazy specs. I don't need it to Ford water or anything like that. You know what I mean? I just need it to be a cool family vehicle for the kiddos. You know, we have a 10 and 11 year old. We bring him to school and to dance and to the park and, you know, go on road trips to Disneyland. So we think the R2 would be fantastic. We kind of like the boxy shape. You know, one of the interesting things we came across with the Model Y is that on paper, it's slightly larger than our old Ford Edge. But in practical terms, when you're inside of it, it's smaller. The shoulder width, both front and back seats are more narrow because of the shape and the aerodynamics. The height is slightly shorter than the Edge. And the feel from the outside, from looking at the R2, I've only been able to see it at like Electrify Expo, and they had it here on display at a couple places, but I've never been able to drive it. I don't know how many people have. But it looks that it's got more of that traditional actual SUV shape, unlike, you know, Mach-E or, you know, Model Y, these things they call SUVs that don't feel like SUVs. I really feel like R2 will feel like an SUV and might come in at an affordable price point that a family can get. So I'm super excited for R2. So seeing it validate, seeing it, someone's, I think at a post had like 100 of them out there on the road. It's a step, right? It's a step for the rich people to get it, which means eventually the people like me will get it. So I'm excited.
All right. Well, look, but before we go, I love how you said at the beginning of the podcast, you're completely brand agnostic as you sit there with your Ford hat on and, you know, a big picture of an F-150 Lightning staring at me from the other side of your turn down for what logo on your screen, which is awesome. But we can't go without talking a little bit about Ford F-150 Lightning. I'm not sure we've covered it a lot in recent weeks, but the new STX trim, I think, is coming, replacing XLT, 2026 Ford F-150 Lightning. They're making that vehicle, Chris, it seems, like a lot better, not just a sort of tweaking around the edges.
Yeah, so they've done some things that I guess I'll kind of temper enthusiasm by saying it's essentially the same truck that it's been since 2022 at the core, right?
Right.
But they're doing some things that a lot of folks have asked for. They're listening to feedback. Obviously, I'm incredibly loyal to Ford because I've been there since the beginning with their first truck. They've flown me out to Detroit, full disclosure, you know, like I've been able to talk to Jim Farley. It's hard not to be loyal to a company that has been so great to me. And I do run the club out here and stuff. So, but I do love EVs and all things. So, but yes, Ford, we did a whole episode, on our Turn Down for Watt podcast. So check that out when you have time for all the dirty details, but they did get rid of the XLT. The XLT is no longer going to be a thing in 2026. They have not switched to NACS. It is still CCS, which some people are disappointed by, but I think they're getting closer to it. We talked earlier about the power promise still being there through the end of the year, where they will install a charger. Part of it, this is speculation on my part, is they expected, I think, to sell hundreds of thousands of these. And so they ordered those Charge Station Pros, these big, bulky 80 amp chargers. 80 amp. And the 24s and 25s don't even do 80 amps. They only do 48. And the 26s are the same way. They only do 48 amp charging, save for, interestingly, the Pro. So the Pro is the only one that you can now option as an 80 amp charger. So and it is now available for retail. So in previous years, you could only get the Pro model as a fleet customer. Or if a fleet customer canceled and you got lucky enough to find one at your local Ford dealer, then as a retail customer, you could get one. But you previously in the U.S., you could not order and spec your own Pro. You had to get lucky and find one at a dealer that had been abandoned officially. I think in Canada, you could order a Pro. And so, sidebar, for some people that always wondered why didn't the Pro qualify for the tax incentive, some people had speculated it might have had LFP or it might have been made in Mexico. No, it didn't qualify for the tax incentive only because Ford never filed the paperwork for it because it was never intended to be sold as a retail order. It was only intended to be sold as a fleet order. So as a fleet customer like FedEx, we could get the credit. A municipality, a utility could get the credit, but a retail customer, because it was never meant to be ordered that way, couldn't. Now, 26, there is no tax credit, so it doesn't matter. Any retail customer can now order and spec, and the order banks are open right now. It is not on the website. You can't go to Ford.com and order it. You have to go to your dealer, and only your dealer can order it, and they can spec you out exactly what you want. And you could get a Pro now, which is their most affordable option, and you could get it with an extended range battery if you want, and you could get it with an 80 amp charger if you want. But it is the only spec that you can do that with. Then the XLT has been eliminated. They've introduced the STX, which has the decals, and we all know that decals add horsepower, so that's exciting. But it does look cooler, and it's got the Raptor / Tremor running boards on it, which is fun. And so that kind of has nice look to it. It also has an option on the STX for the vinyl floors. So if you're doing some off-roading or some more robust driving, but you want something that's a little bit more of an upgrade from the Pro, you can get that STX still with the vinyl floors. And that's kind of an upgrade. So it's just going to be that thing that happens to differentiate it from the Flash. The other thing that's different with the STS and the Flash is, for the first time, you can get phone as key. And that's been a big thing of feedback from customers that were upset. Why don't I have phone as key? Tesla customers are laughing right now because they've had phone as key forever. For Ford customers, we're like, we've had key fobs. Even my original Lariat, my 2022 standard range Lariat, did not have phone as key. So the STX and the Flash, for the first time, will have phone as key as an option. So this is another sticking point for Ford, though, is if you want these things, you need to get with your dealer and you need to order it, because a lot of times dealers will not order the options like phone as key. Phone as key also comes with the keypad on the side. For people that work construction sites and things, Ford has a keypad that goes on the door, and you don't have to have a key fob or anything at all. And the keypad is important because you're wearing construction gloves and you don't want to have keys in your pocket, or people that go to the beach and don't want to have keys and how do I bury them in the sand or whatever. You can lock your truck and unlock your truck with the keypad and leave your stuff inside and your gear inside. So the keypad is really popular among Ford drivers. They took the keypad away last year. The keypad is now coming back as a factory installed option as part of the phone as key package. So the phone as key package has phone as key, it has the keypad, and it has what's called intelligent access, which is where, as long as the phone or key fob is in your pocket, you touch the door handle and it unlocks. That is a Ford a change. And then I think the most exciting change is they have eliminated the 98 kilowatt hour standard range battery altogether across the lineup. And the smallest battery will now be 123 kilowatt hours. So even the standard pack for Pro and and STX and Flash, those will all be 123 kilowatt hours, which is a big step up from the 98 that it was before. And then the extended range pack for Lariat and for Platinum is 131. So there's a much smaller gap now between those two battery packs. That's a lot of value. And then at the same time, the price on all of them has come down by about $5,000 across the board. However, you've lost the $7,500 tax rebate. So, you know.
But is the Pro the best option just to get into one then, if it's a working vehicle, or, you know, it's not your primary polish it every Sunday morning kind of vehicle?
I think the Pro is a lot of fun, but it is very much work spec, bare bones, very manual seats. It does have the vinyl seats, vinyl floors. As a family, it might not be the best, but
it's young kids, you know. What
that's true.
You don't want them messing up your fancy leather seats.
Yeah. If you've got doggos, right, and you got kids, and you want to be able to hose it down, maybe, right?
Yeah, cool. Yeah.
For some lifestyles, you know, the commercial truck interiors kind of make a lot of sense. You know, they're not super comfy, but
yeah, it just feels like Slate came along and we're like, you know, we're going to have a truck that is just obviously much smaller, but is a utility. So it feels like that, you know, people should kind of love utility vehicles if they love that one as much. But it's obviously a lot more money.
I'll just add two things real quick. One little change that I'm not sure why they did, it probably doesn't matter, is in the frunk, there were two USB-C outlets along with the 120 plugs. Those have been removed on all the specs. I'm not sure why. Maybe nobody used them. And like we said earlier, a lot of these things on the Fords are options. So if you're not ordering directly from your dealer, order banks are open now. They're going to go into production in December. And then deliveries into 26. If you're not ordering them custom for exactly what you want, when you go to a dealer, you have to look and see, does it have Fonus Key? And importantly, does it have Pro Power at 9.6 kilowatts? Because so many people got disappointed. I see it all the time in the Facebook group where people get home and they're like, hey, is there a way for me to upgrade my Pro Power from the simple 2.4 outlets to the 240 volt plug, the 9.6? And there isn't. Once you bought it with the lower spec, which a lot of the dealers default to the lower cost because that's what they easier to sell. By the way, I miss your episodes where you guys find vehicles for people, right?
Yeah.
But so many people, you guys know, when they're looking for cars, they sort by lowest price. So if you're sorting for lowest price as a dealer, you want your lowest price vehicle on the lot. That's what people find. So that means you're not optioning for Fonus Key. You're not optioning for the 9.6 kilowatt Pro Power. So people go and they find it. They're so excited about everything else and they drive it. They take it home. And the last thing they were thinking about was the 9.6 kilowatt Pro Power.
Wow.
So you got to look for that. And if you want that Fonus Key, you got to specifically look for it or you're going to be incredibly disappointed later and there's no way to upgrade it.
That's fascinating. All right. Great consumer buying advice there. Still a great vehicle. I'm sure Ford would love to sell you one. Before we go, Dom, can you find online a picture of the Bolt that was charging this week? Do you remember that story?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was from Charge Positive Talik out here in San Diego.
So that was an uncamouflaged blue new 2027 model year Bolt, which I love because it was like, oops, they've caught it charging. Obviously, car makers are not stupid. So it did its job. We were all talking about it, but we are talking about it because it's exciting because we all want to see cheaper EVs. And this is going to be key. GM's on a roll right now, easily number two in the US on in terms of share of pure electric vehicles. Equinox is selling really well. It's doing gangbusters. And so, oh, let's talk about Bolt. Looks like a Bolt EUV.
I'm having a hard time finding it. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
Here we go.
You got it.
Here's an article with it. And then, we got it.
You got it. Let's pop that on screen. I think if you like the Bolt or original Bolt EUV, they're not going to scare you away.
There you go. Talik is the man. He's so great, man. He does some great stuff. He's got some great videos with the Gravity, by the way, if nobody's seen his channel.
Already.
Yeah.
Cool. So awesome that this went out. This is out for a reason because they're ready for it to be seen in these images. And so, I hate to be cynical, but it was charging on a supercharger. So it gets us talking about it. And this and the new Nissan Leaf coming out are going to be okay. So the tax credit is gone, but these are going to be, once you get into the details of how everyone gets a car on their driveway, which 90%+ people finance. No one's walking into a dealer with 40 grand in used notes, hopefully anyway, to put down on a car. So everyone's financing a vehicle, and so by the time you get to the monthly offers on these, and the best offers won't be there on launch day, but give it time. And you're going to see some stellar deals on this very affordable, reliable EV motoring in a year's time. This is going to be a brilliant addition to the market in the US because we've got cars like this. We've got a ton of cars like this in Europe. And you guys are just desperate for stuff like this.
Peugeots and Renaults and such.
Yeah, well, even Leap Motor, which is the, Stellantis are a big investor in Leap Motor.
They've got Skoda?
The little Epic, that's a smaller car from them. But Leap Motor are releasing the B10s. The C10's the big SUV, the B10's the midsize, and it's going to be like £20,000, which is $25,000 US, about $36,000 Aussie. And that's just so much. Again, it's Chinese, so make of it what you will, but so much value for 20K or 25,000 US equivalent. But that's the price out the door. So when I say £20,000, I mean that's the out of the door price with taxes and everything. And like, you guys are just desperate for cars like this,
yeah,
because you just need cheap, reliable, affordable second car, sometimes family transport to get to work, to do, you know, all the essential jobs. And so, yeah, looking for this is the C10 you're looking at.
C10? Okay.
Yeah, this is the big SUV. That's 32,000 here, which is about 40,000 US.
I like the Chevy Volt a lot more, at least.
Yeah,
like,
it's a big car.
From the looks at it, just looking at it, though, like the design, the Chevy Bolt, the new one, the approach is just like friendly and approachable. This just seems kind of awkward. The interior shot looks kind of nice.
Yeah, like these cars are fine. Like,
yeah. Yeah, the interiors look great.
At some point, they'll build them in Europe to avoid import tariffs. On particularly the cheaper cars, but or they'll use European contract manufacturers to, they'll use semi knockdown kits or something, but and they are already, I think, in some cases. So yeah, like £32,000, maybe £38,000 US or £40,000 US for a big SUV. So
yeah, Martin, you have so many great, cool, like great options out there. Do you ever make it to the States, and are there things out in the States that you, there's so many that when I get out there, I'm like, my neck is sore from looking all over the place. Are there things that we have that you come out to the States and you're crazy, like, oh, look at that, that you wish you had?
Or yeah, so Rivian, so R2 is designed to be an international vehicle, so we're psyched about Rivian R2. And Lucid are finally, now Lucid won't make right-hand drive for the UK market with the Air or Gravity. They'll with the $45,000 Lucid, they'll do that right-hand drive, I would have thought. But they probably won't re-engineer Air or Gravity. But yeah, we do have Lucids, but not in enough numbers. That's on mainland Europe, left-hand drive anyway. And then Rivian. Yeah, we're just excited about Rivians when they come over here as well. So, whereas the GM vehicles, not so much. Again, sold in some places. I think you can get Lyriq in France, and it's a bit of a mishmash. But yeah, not so much the GM vehicles. It's more the sort of the startups, really, that we're excited about seeing. So yeah, that's when we look enviously across the Atlantic at the cars you have. Yeah, I think the comments look good. Hey, we were going to do a shorter one, and I say we're at 4 p.m. but we're not, because Chris is West Coast. So we really, Chris, thank you so much for getting up really early to talk to the, you know, with our audience. We really appreciate it. Thank you for that.
Oh, I love being on the show, guys. Sorry I talked a little bit too long. I went longer than we expected. That's my fault.
No, not at all. We love having you on. Your insight, your expertise is brilliant. So if you are a podcast listener to us in the audio form, you can always check out the show on YouTube, but you can go into your app on your device. I use Overcast on my iPhone, works pretty well. And just type in Turn Down For What. You'll see it. You can hit subscribe, and then it's there waiting. It's a great podcast that you can listen to alongside all your other pods as well. Thank you very much for the comments. Thanks for joining, Chris, says Damien. Great show, says Anthony. Greg says, thanks, guys. Keenan out. Thanks, Jeff, as always.
We can, Jeff.
Yeah, have a good one. So it's great to see the comments as well. And a lot of live viewers this week. So I appreciate you joining for us for live. We hit some big numbers on the live stream too. So that's awesome. I think Tom is back next week.
For 1 week, and then he's off gallivanting around the world again in 2 weeks from then.
That's right.
But then he'll be back in 3 weeks.
And you won't be.
And then I may probably not going to be here. I'll be gallivanting across the world and more on that coming up. Probably talk about that. Maybe we'll talk about that a bit next week or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you taking the batteries included sign with you, or should we auction that off for charity?
I need to make a new one. I need to make a portable one.
All right. Maybe we should auction that off for charity or something. Or you can send it to me and I'll put it behind me.
One of those things. Yeah, yeah. I was wondering what to do with it, you know?
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll work it out. We'll spill the beans soon. Guys, thank you so much for watching and listening as always. And we really appreciate it. Until the next one. Hey, Dom. Say ciao.
I need my hands for this. Ciao.